Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith. These days, polling data is king. In the mainstream media, truth seems to lie with the majority opinion. And so, we're analyzing what people believe about the cross of Christ. For some crucial insights, stay with us. From the Moody Church in Chicago, this is Running to Win with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, whose clear teaching helps us make it across the finish line. Today, in a series on why the cross can do what politics can't, Erwin Lutzer speaks again about what man thinks of the cross. He's turning our attention to signs and wonders.
Throughout the history of the church, this has been a question. How many signs do we need in order to believe? There's been even a whole movement called Signs and Wonders. This was a problem for the reformers. Because when they began to look at the Bible and they began to peel away layers of tradition to get to the message of the cross, Rome said, but you don't have miracles and we do. We have statues that weep and we have relics that multiply themselves and you have nothing. The reformers said, to us, the power is in the message itself. For it pleases God through the word preached to save those that believe. So there's always been that question. New Agers today, they like to say that we have signs. I remember years ago when Billy Graham was in India, there was a Hindu priest who challenged him to a healing duel. They were supposed to line up all these sick people and see who could heal the most, the fastest. Well, I think Billy was wise in not taking him up on it. This man may have had some very interesting alien powers by which he may have been able to pull off some, quote, miracles, and Billy might not have looked very good in that context. But it is, you see, through the message that is preached, and New Agers say, we have the miracles. And people are saying today, maybe that's what the church needs, is a whole bunch of miracles. Apostle Paul says, you know, the Jews are looking for signs and they're missing the whole point. It's not that we don't have an explosive, powerful message, but it is the message itself of the crucified Christ that does the miracle and does the great work. And there's a miracle for you. So first of all, the cross, you see, clashes with our pride, with our desire to believe in somebody who's going to do all these marvelous things that were expected when he was on earth. The cross also clashes with our wisdom. The Greeks seek for wisdom. Now, if you know anything about Greece, it gave us Plato and Aristotle, two of the smartest men who have ever lived, period. Nobody, I don't believe, has ever philosophically reached their heights. Whole dissertations today are still being written about Plato and Aristotle. And yet, you know what Plato and Aristotle, the Greeks generally, they believed that God was a God of apatheia. You do catch the word, don't you? It's the word apathetic. You see, reasoning from the world to God, they concluded that God could have really no contact with the world. That he was a God without emotion. He could not be affected. He could never be changed. He could not possibly be interested in human beings. That would be to denigrate him, they taught. And then most of all, they said that there's no way that the word, that God could ever become flesh, because in their view, whenever you had flesh, which had changeability, you had imperfection. So when John writes in chapter 1, verse 14, and the word was made flesh, that phrase was like an explosion in the philosophical world of that day, which said, yes, God became man. And the Greeks stood back and said, absolutely unthinkable. Unthinkable. It does not fit with our conception of God and with our conception of good and evil. Now, there were two different kinds of Greeks. There were the Epicureans, who were, of course, the hedonists of the day, but they were also the materialists. They were the Carl Sagans. You know, the universe is all that ever was and ever will be. That's where they ended. And then there were those who were the Stoics, and they were the New Agers of today. They were into psychic energy. They were into astrology. They were into believing that the soul becomes one and loses its identity with the universe in a great oneness. By the way, you did hear about the New Ager, did you not, who went into a hamburger shop and said to the man, please make me one with everything. Am I going too fast for some of you? When the Apostle Paul was on Mars Hill and when he was preaching there, he was preaching to both groups just like we do today. We preach to the materialists and we also preach to the New Agers. But there was one thing that they really did agree on, and that was that salvation was through ideas. Salvation was through human wisdom. Salvation was a matter of knowing things that we could figure out on our own. They were scandalized at the thought that God had to reveal to us something that we didn't know, because after all, we know enough, number one. And number two, they were offended at the very notion that God had to come to redeem man because we were that bad off. And their big thing was that man's problem is not sin, it is simply ignorance, and the answer to man is more knowledge. So they could not accept the cross, and to them it was plain foolishness. So you see, the cross clashes with our pride, it clashes with our wisdom, it also clashes with our values. Read this. For consider your calling, brethren, that there are not many wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble. But God has chosen the foolish things of the world to shame the wise, and God has chosen the weak things of the world to shame the things which are strong. And the base things of the world and the despised God has chosen, the things which are not. That's what he has chosen, that he might nullify the things that are, that no man should boast before God. In the early church, there were many different converts. In fact, Pliny tells us that people were converted from all different walks of life. And you had some who were rich, and you had some who were poor, and some who were educated. But by and large, Christianity flourished among the lower class. It always has. It flourished there not because it is intellectually indefensible, but usually those who are going through tough times recognize their needs. And there were many slaves in the empire, remember, in those days. And a slave, according to Greek teaching, was a tool. A slave was a thing without any rights, without any value, except insofar as he helped his master. That was all. In fact, it was incredibly cruel. Even the children of slaves, if they had children, were considered to be owned by the owner, and the parents were not considered the owner of their own children. Tragic. But you see, it was the remarkable truth of Christianity and the surprising good news that it is exactly those kinds of people that God often calls to greatness. Because there are not many wise according to the flesh, some but not many. Not many mighty are called, and not many noble. You remember Queen Victoria? She said, thank God for the letter M. And she said that because she read this text, and she was so thankful that it did not say not any noble are called, just not many, because she was among the called. Since that time, there have been some members of that royal family that, at least looking at across the ocean, it appears as if they are not yet called. But nevertheless, it says, not many mighty, not many noble, but God has chosen the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. And God comes along and takes a slave who is a nobody in this life and elevates him to be a somebody, to be a son and a daughter of God Almighty. And Christianity taught that you might not matter in this life at all, but you matter to God. You matter to God. And that God, sometimes to scandalize the human mind, takes people whom we think are great and mighty and wonderful, and they think that about themselves too, and he bypasses them, and he goes to the needy and the downcast and the nothings of this world, and he makes something out of them. He loves the unlovely, and he elevates the lowly. It is Bonhoeffer who said that Christianity teaches the unending worth of the apparently worthless and the unending worthlessness of that which is apparently very valuable. That's the genius of it. And why does God do it this way? That no flesh should boast before God. That nobody can ever say it is because of my wisdom or it's because of who I am. It is all because of His grace that we've been singing about this morning. It is all because of His mercy. It is all because of the depth of His undeserved love. He has made us what we are. And that's the message of the cross that runs so counter to human wisdom. To summarize, three lessons. First, the cross, you see. The cross is considered foolishness because it is actually a witness to our failure. It is a witness to our failure. The Jews failed, the Greeks failed, we fail. We are all equally under sin. We are all equally in need, and the world does not want to hear that. You know what most people believe? They believe that they were born normal. By the way, have you ever wondered what normal is? Have you ever met anybody that is normal? Do you know the name of anybody that is normal? But they believe that they were born normal, and all of their hang-ups are because of what other people have done to them. See, that's what they believe. And there are some people today who struggle greatly because of terrible things that have been done to them. But the point is that we have to understand that we were born sinners already, born in trespasses and sin, born dead toward God, and unless God were to quicken us and enliven us and grant us the gift of faith, we would stay that way. And the cross, therefore, as it is preached, is despised and thought of as foolishness. That's why it's not very popular today. The idea that there has to be a sin bearer for us. And people say, I'm not that bad. Thank you. It may be necessary for you, but not for me. So first of all, the cross is a witness to our failure. Secondly, to accept the cross is really to accept a whole new worldview. A whole new worldview. It is a whole new way of seeing the world and seeing God. Think of that woman to whom I witnessed. The one who's wearing, you know, the cross of Christ and also a pendant to the god Om. Think of what she needs to do in order to believe in Christ. Now, mind you, we could have maybe had a little prayer on the plane. I could have convinced her that what she needs to do is to pray to Jesus. And she could have said, oh, yeah, sure, I'll pray to Him. Yeah, I have nothing against Him. It's just that I have all these other gods too. And if she had said that, she had not believed, and the cross in her life would have been of none effect whatever. What she needs is a whole new vision of God. She needs to see God's holiness, the fact that He is so holy and so far removed from us in terms of moral holiness that there's no way that we can just come to Him on our own terms. That's why it's so important, you know, to get people lost before they are saved, because if so, they'll be praying prayers that are meaningless down the road, because they have not seen the fact that the cross of Jesus Christ is not just a bridge to God. The cross of Christ is the bridge to God, and there can be none other. None.
Erwin Lutzer with more of What Man Thinks of the Cross. Another message in a series on why the cross can do what politics can't. Next time, this message will conclude. In sorting out how to mix faith and politics, we all need some clear teaching. This 8-part CD series can be yours as our thank you when you give a gift of any amount to support Running to Win. Just call 1-800-215-5001. That's 1-800-215-5001. Online, go to offerrtw.com. That's offerrtw.com. Or write to us at Running to Win, Moody Church, 1635 North LaSalle Boulevard, Chicago, Illinois, 60614. This is Dave McAllister. Running to Win is a ministry of the Moody Church.